Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN with Dr. Leilani Alvarez, one of my favorite guests on the radio. She is the head of the Schwarzman Animal Medical Center's Department of Integrative and Rehabilitative Medicine Center that is based in New York City. It is a internationally renowned medical facility for animals. And Dr. Alvarez, again, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you so much, Steve. You're one of my favorite people, too.
Well, thank you. And one thing I love about you is hearing you at veterinary conferences. And I suspect I'll be hearing you soon again everywhere talking about, well, your book, The Handbook of Canine Exercise Therapy, a 624-page textbook with Jennifer Repack and Kara Amstutz, if I pronounce those names right, because I don't know them. Okay. And what I believe is you could do rehab as a person just by walking around with this book because it's so big.
I know. It was meant to be a handbook, but it's really not a handbook. It's a book.
It's a giant book. All right. So if you were to boil everything down in the book for pet owners to know about, what would that be?
Well, it teaches, it is meant for veterinary practitioners. That said, you know, somebody who is already working in the rehab world, it's appropriate for anybody who is interested in learning more about rehab, has fundamental veterinary knowledge already. The book guides you on how to develop an effective exercise program for any kind of dog, including developing dogs, so puppies, senior dogs, dogs who are competing in a variety of different athletic events, working dogs. So we have a section from Cindy Otto, who you probably know, Steve.
She's I
from
do.
The Penn Dog Working
yeah.
Center. Yep. So she wrote a chapter. And then we have specific conditions. The largest part of the book is about, you know, every possible condition that impairs mobility in dogs and how to develop an effective exercise program, because it's not about following a recipe, and that's what's unique about this book. I think people love to have, okay, my dog tore their cruciate. You know, week one, I should do X, Y, Z. Week two, I'm going to do these other things. And, you know, going by time, you want to know what you're supposed to do. But the reality is that, and you could probably associate to this, Steve, that every dog is an individual. And the same as people, when we have injuries that affect our mobility, you know, I may have knee arthritis and you may have knee arthritis, and maybe our x-rays look similar, Steve, but our exercise programs likely would look very different. And that has to do with, well, what's your level of strength? What is your pain level? You know, what was your condition before your injury? And all of these factors impact an appropriate exercise program. So we're really teaching how to do appropriate assessment of the place where your patient is at, to use that as a basis for developing their exercise plan.
Yeah, you and I have talked about this as far as the cruciate. So that's why you brought that up, I know. And in fact, you're a really good runner, a marathon runner. I'm lucky if I run for the bus. But that's a whole other story. So let me ask you this. It was maybe even 10 years ago, I don't know, where for rehab, for people, it wasn't covered by insurance, and it was a questionable modality. Cynics said, what's this physical therapy stuff? Now there's a rehab place around every corner, it seems, and it is accepted by insurance, as it should be. Is it any different for our animals?
Yes. In fact, most veterinary insurance companies do cover rehab now. We have a lot of patients, their insurance tends to pay 90% of the cost of rehabilitation. So definitely for all listeners, if your dog is having any kind of difficulty moving for whatever reason it might be, And yeah, because I know Chicago does have a lot of rehab facilities. Check with your insurance if you have insurance, and if you don't have insurance, get it. And make sure it includes rehab. They cover acupuncture too. We actually find that the veterinary insurance companies are more likely to cover the things that are done in rehab than your than the person's insurance.
Really?
Human insurance. Yeah, like acupuncture. You know, I don't think it's that common that your insurance would cover acupuncture. I mean, some do, but and for example, they cover laser treatments that would definitely not be covered by human insurance, underwater treadmill. You know, we do the modalities that we use that are pretty standard in veterinary medicine. For example, PRP injections are covered in veterinary insurance companies, and they are definitely not covered because I had one and I had to pay out of pocket.
Yeah. So why do you think that? I did not know that. Why do you think that is?
I think because it's considered pretty standard in veterinary medicine, whereas in the human side, it's still considered experimental.
Hmm. All right. And I'm not so sure it really is experimental, but that's another conversation for another time, mm-hmm. I suppose. So what mm-hmm. you're also about is prevention. So, yes, I want to go deeper into PT for dogs, but can we prevent some of these? Are so many of these injuries, or how many of these injuries, are actually in reality preventable in the first place?
100%. We have a whole chapter in this book about weight management. That's probably the number one thing that pet owners can do to prevent arthritis. It's the number one risk factor for development of arthritis is obesity in dogs. And it's not, you know, I think people think like, okay, I'm saying the word obese, you know, they're envisioning you see a morbidly obese dog, but just being 10% overweight, that will increase the risk of development of arthritis. And it's not just arthritis. Of course, when we're carrying extra fat, that is inflammation. It's going to drive the body to a more inflammatory state, which predisposes you to all kinds of injuries. So that would be number one, I would say. And beyond that, I would say a warm-up. Always warm up. We have a lot of patients that, you know, are mostly couch potatoes during the week. And then on the weekend, when the owners have days off, they go and they play fetch for hours, or they go on a 5-10 mile hike, or they're playing frisbee, or you name it. They just have a big jump in their activity level on the weekends. We call those the weekend warriors. And those dogs can get injured. Why? Because their body is not prepared for that high level of activity. They haven't been doing much all week, and then it's, you know, this big demand on those particular days. And warming up, doing some exercises before you do that high-end activity can go a long way to preventing the injury. And I forgot to mention when you said for me to explain the book, the real beauty of this book, what really makes it stand out from other books, is every single exercise that we talk about in this book has a video associated with it. Mm. So you scan the QR code, and then you see the demonstration of the exercise. So it's not just an explanation of the exercise. You actually watch it so that you know that you're doing it correctly.
All right.
There's a lot of good warm-up exercises. If you want, I can review some for the listeners.
All right. Before we do that, though, maybe we will take one or two of those. But when we come back with Dr. Leilani Alvarez on WGN. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN with Dr. Leilani Alvarez, author of Handbook of Canine Exercise Therapy. She is a speaker at veterinary meetings and conferences all over the world, and I've had the privilege to speak with you several different times. So you were going to offer, and I want to see how you do this on the radio, Dr. Alvarez. It is theater of the mind, as they say. So an exercise or two that we can do with our dogs before going for that run.
Yeah. Well, a really easy warm-up is walking. So if you're planning to play fetch with your dog, if you're planning for your dog to play frisbee, go hiking where they're going to have to climb and do things that require strength or a lot of exertion, I always recommend a 5 to 10 minute leash walk. So a nice, comfortable walk, just to get the blood flow moving and all of those muscles, get the joint fluid moving around is helpful.
How about
that's a really good one.
How about any stretching exercises?
Interestingly, we don't recommend, well, you know, if you can teach your dog to stretch on their own, then it's great. Active stretching is good. What I don't want to do is for an owner to put their hands on their dog and then pull their legs around. That's not helpful. And in fact, in people, we have seen that passive stretching actually can predispose you to injury. So we don't recommend that. You kind of want to move around a little bit. So you want to, I do jumping jacks before I run. You want to get the blood flow moving. What you don't want to teach the body is to get relaxed before big activity. You actually want to get things moving. So yeah, instead of that, I mean, you could teach, one thing I do like, which can be good before exercise, is a play bow stretch.
That's exactly what I was thinking about.
So if you teach your dog to do a play bow as a training command, and for those who don't know what that is, dogs naturally do this when they want to initiate play. So they'll be up on their back legs, and in the front they get down low, so their elbows are kind of touching the ground, and sometimes they'll even jump around a little bit because they're like, okay, let's play. But that is a really good stretch for the entire back. It stretches all the muscles in the back of the arm, so the triceps. It's really good. It's actually a stretch for the hamstrings as well, so the back of the legs. It's a really good active stretch, and especially if you do that repeatedly, like say, let's say you do 3 to 5 play bows in a row, that would be an excellent exercise before more impact, higher impact activity. And so yeah, that's a good one.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say another one that's fairly easy. If your dog has learned how to sit, you can have him sit and stand back up and do that. It's sequentially, kind of like if you or I did some squats. And that's really great, especially if they're going to have to jump, because that really warms up the back legs. So those are just a couple exercises, yeah, that you could do to warm up your dog.
Oh, I think that's extremely helpful. Now, there's been new research on the human side about strength training. I don't know that we're going to have our dogs go to a gym and lift weights, but it is supposed to prevent injury and be good for aging in humans. Is there any relationship with dogs?
Absolutely. We know that both in humans and in dogs that your ability to move independently is a predictor of your longevity. So if you're having difficulty moving, if you can't do particular tasks anymore, you're more likely to die soon.
What?
For the dog. Yeah, for the dog aging project, they're finding, you know, if you're slowing down, the dog's not able to keep up anymore. Their mortality is more impending. So yeah, moving around is really important. We don't have the studies that we do in humans that weightlifting, because it's important for keeping your bones. It helps decrease osteoporosis in people. We don't have that data in dogs. However, I will say that definitely if you can do strength training in your dog, it's very beneficial, particularly for those senior dogs, because one normal aging change, it happens in all dogs no matter what you do, is they lose muscle mass. That's called sarcopenia. It's the loss of muscle related to aging in healthy states. So they don't have any problem medically. They're just getting older, and you lose muscle mass. The best way to try to decrease how rapidly that occurs is doing strength training.
But how do you do that with I'm going to bring your book is Handbook of Canine Exercise Therapy, but I know you care about felines too. So how do you do this with dogs or cats? Because they're not going to lift weights, I don't think.
Well, there are various ways where you can introduce resistance. So it's not weight necessarily. I mean, some people, oh my gosh, I don't even want to talk about it, but there are weights that you can use. We do not recommend it, and the book does not have anything regarding weights. It carries much higher risk. We do not recommend it. However, we do use resistance bands for a lot of the exercises, and that can be a great thing to introduce as a progression. It's not a beginning exercise, but as a progression, you can add resistance bands to increase the level of strength. But we're mostly using body weight in our strengthening exercises. So one of the exercises we just talked about, Steve, the sit-to-stand exercise, that is a strengthening exercise. The dog is strengthening all the hind leg muscles. It's like you and I doing squats, repeatedly, and your legs will start to burn. It's about the number of repetitions you do. Also, it can even be like if you emphasize the standing portion versus the sitting portion to make it more eccentric. So eccentric would mean like slowing down the rise, for example. And those are various ways that you can focus in the strengthening exercise. Another example of a strengthening exercise, you and I might do a push-up in a dog. That would be a down to stand. So when the dog is in a down position, you have them stand up and you do that repeatedly. And guess what? You're doing push-ups. Great strengthening exercise.
I want to talk about whether motion is lotion, as people like you, maybe you, say. Is that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely, it's the lotion. And that references the joints. Joints really don't get any blood supply. So unlike your muscles and the rest of your body that have blood flow, they have blood vessels coming in, bringing all those essential nutrients. The way that joints get nutrition is through movement. That's why movement, the lotion is the motion, motion is the lotion, because when you're not moving, your joints are not getting any nutrition. That's why, for the most part, when dogs have arthritis, their symptoms are worse after rest. It's that first rise in the morning where they're really stiff or maybe even limping, and then they tend to warm up out of it, because as they move, we get the lotion back in those joints and everything feels better.
Well, we're going to feel better after we, but first break for commercials. We're going to move to commercials, but then we will be right back talking about solving some injury issues. I also want to talk about what we now know about osteoarthritis in dogs and some ways to deal with that. We're talking with Dr. Leilani Alvarez on WGN.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
She is a superstar in veterinary medicine, Dr. Leilani Alvarez, Handbook of Canine Exercise Therapy, and she is the head of the Schwarzman Animal Medical Center's Department of Integrative and Rehabilitative Medicine. And boy, oh boy, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And what we know now, Dr. Alvarez, is that we were certainly underestimating the amount of dogs that actually suffer from arthritis. So at what point might it be preventable with exercise? And once they are diagnosed, I believe, based on what we were talking about, motion being lotion, just sitting around is not the answer.
Correct. Correct. The biggest way to prevent arthritis is don't let your dog get overweight. We know that excess fat on the body is the number one risk factor for developing arthritis in dogs. The other reason dogs develop arthritis is usually because there's something wrong in their joint. So, for example, they're born with hip dysplasia, or they're born with elbow dysplasia, or they injure themselves, like they tear their cruciate ligament, that's the ACL in people. Those are ways that we're going to get arthritis as well. And yes, exercise can be one of the best ways, actually, to manage arthritis. In fact, we have a whole book chapter in the Handbook of Canine Exercise Therapy written by Dr. Kristen Kirkby Shaw, who is a world leader in canine arthritis. And it's interesting. We used to think that exercise was good because it strengthens the muscles. But actually, we have found, both in people and in dogs, that exercise is actually means for pain management for animals that have arthritis. So, yeah, exercise, super, super important, both for prevention and also management of arthritis.
Now, what kind of exercise are we talking about? So we don't want to run a marathon with that dog who might be 15 years old, but we do want to take a walk. But I bring this up because I'm also thinking about water sports.
Yeah. Well, this is, again, where I'm going to go back to not every dog is the same. So, unfortunately, Steve, I can't tell you XYZ, this is what you should do for your dog that has arthritis, because that's very variable. I can't tell you what every dog with arthritis should do, because it matters where is the arthritis? How bad is it? Is the dog painful right now? Because before you introduce any exercise, you need to address pain. That's number one. Also, let's say the dog is overweight. I would really focus on weight loss before I would go into a whole, you know, strengthening program. But for sure, for sure, for sure, every dog should be walking if they're able. Some dogs actually are not walking very well. So then there's other things you can do. But what I recommend is start where you're at. You know, what can your dog do today? If your dog can only go for a 5-minute walk, okay, well, first I recommend visit with your vet. Make sure, you know, do they need any pain medication? Do they need to be on a weight loss diet food? And then once your dog is feeling better, then you can begin to add a little bit more time, a little bit more distance to your walk, always making sure that they're not getting worse. And then as far as other exercises, in general, I would say swimming is a wonderful exercise for arthritis. Why? Because there's no impact through the joint. So they're floating in the water. So that joint, especially like elbows and wrists, we get a lot of range of motion when dogs swim. It's not as good for the back joints, so the ankles, the knees, and the hips. Dogs are a bit of lazy swimmers in the back legs. Occasionally they'll kick those, but they're mostly using their front legs when they swim. So it's heavy range of motion on the wrists and the elbows and some shoulder as well, but it's primarily elbows and wrists. If your dog has arthritis in the elbows, swimming generally is something we recommend. But again, visit with your vet because, you know, they may need to have their pain addressed, for example, before they can begin swimming. But what's nice about that is they're not putting any impact through the joint, whereas because of the water, they're going to get a lot of strengthening. So it's a really nice, not usually painful for the joints, but really good for strengthening the muscles.
And to your point, a French bulldog may not raise its paw and say, I want to jump in the pool.
My gosh, that's such a good point. Some dogs are like, it's contraindicated. Yeah, the bulldogs definitely. Also a Labrador that has laryngeal paralysis, LARPAR, you don't want to swim them either. So, yeah, you know, definitely visit with your vet first.
Absolutely. No argument there. All right. So I want to talk about some other modalities that X number of years ago, but not that long ago, you mentioned briefly acupuncture. I mean, many considered, well, that's crazy. My experience, Dr. Alvarez, though, is that people will do what's crazy or non-conventional. And I'm not saying these modalities are, in fact, crazy or non-conventional, but they will do those things that they might not do for themselves, but they'll do them for their pets. Have you found that as well?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know what it is about rehab, but we attract the best owners. They're just so dedicated. They'll do anything for their pet. And I feel like sometimes our owners are like, man, I wish I was getting these treatments because their pet's getting a massage and they're swimming in the pool and
yeah.
You know, getting this wonderful treatments, and they don't do any of that for themselves.
All right. So I want to talk about acupuncture. Is acupuncture, it's a broad question, helpful?
Of course. Yes. And what I would say about acupuncture, it's one of the very oldest types forms of medicine, and also one of the safest. It's very, very safe approach to medical problems. There's very, very little risk. I always say, oh, we've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. The thing with acupuncture is it can take a while to see the benefits. It has a cumulative effect. So you need to wait a few weeks before, you know, you give up on it. We typically recommend 6 weekly sessions, and usually by week 4 or 5, we're starting to see some improvement. But sometimes it can take 6 weeks, and in rare cases, it might be as long as 8 weeks. But it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful for chronic pain management, which, you know, dogs with arthritis, for example, are experiencing chronic pain. And acupuncture is just, it's a non-pharmacologic, you know, so you're not giving any medicines. It's your own medicine. It's the body's medicine. Because what it does is over time, you're modulating pain response. So as you're doing more and more acupuncture treatments, the body begins to better regulate pain. So it's pretty, pretty awesome how that works.
It is. It's one of the oldest forms of therapy. I want to talk about some of the newer ones, including targeted pulsed electromagnetic therapy. What did he just say? We'll find out with Dr. Leilani Alvarez, who I think understands what I'm talking about. In fact, I'm sure she does. When we come back on WGN. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN with a superstar veterinarian. I have many on the show, and today is no exception. Dr. Leilani Alvarez, author of Handbook of Canine Exercise Therapy. How many years did it take you to put this book together with your co-editors?
Oh, my goodness. From the time we first started talking about it to it being published, it was 4 years.
Yeah, well, really, I don't think people realize how much effort. Of course, this book is, what, 600 and something pages long. So if you want exercise for yourself, just walk around with this book, I think. It's like weightlifting. All right, so what did I just say? Oh, targeted pulsed electromagnetic therapy. It's a mouthful. But it's a newer, I think, modality, certainly compared to acupuncture, which we had been talking about.
Yeah. So PEMF, pulsed electromagnetic field therapy, which we are now able to offer in a targeted form. It's a loop that you can purchase and use on your dog. It's definitely newer, although, you know, it really sort of started to get used in the 80s, early 2000s, but definitely much, much newer modality. It's great because it's also relatively very risk-free. You're not gonna hurt anything by doing this therapy. It's a very lightweight device. It's called the Assisi Loop. It's wonderful for dogs that have arthritis. I really, really like it for dogs that have had disc disease, so IVDD. If they've had any type of herniated disc, they've had surgery. You know, think about your dachshunds, your Frenchies. Even some large breed dogs that may have had back surgery. It's really nice for that. In fact, I did a study at AMC evaluating this device and its effect on pain in dogs recovering from back surgery, and we found a significant difference. So the dogs that got the PMF device needed much fewer pain medication than the dogs who got the fake device. So we had one that looked just like it, but it didn't emit therapy. And so it's great, great for pain management.
All right. So you brought up a couple of topics there that you just said the word pain. And I want to circle back to some ways in which we could help dogs with pain. But one thing that I wanted to talk to you about is pain itself. In humans, Dr. Tammy Grubb, who I'm sure you know, taught me that in humans, in people that suffer chronic pain, depression is far more likely to occur than in the general population of people who don't have chronic pain. Do you think, and this is just your opinion, I suppose, unless you have data on this, I doubt any data exists, but you're as experienced at this as anyone I know. Do you think that dogs, or for that matter, cats, suffering chronic pain may actually be clinically depressed?
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just depression, it's actually anxiety too. So the areas of the brain that are dedicated and light up, when somebody is depressed or anxious, it's the same pathways that light up when something painful happens. They share the same pathways, and that is why the risk goes way high. It goes both ways. So let's say that you didn't suffer from depression or anxiety, and then you're in a car accident, you've had all these injuries, and you experience pain. So chronic pain can increase the risk for depression and anxiety, but the other way around too. So let's say that you suffer from depression or anxiety, you're more likely to experience pain at higher thresholds and more retractable, meaning harder to treat. Do we see this in dogs? I think yes, absolutely. I see it, particularly my older dogs that are getting arthritis. I think when they lose mobility, they definitely become depressed because dogs want to be active. They want to be out with their owner, enjoying activities. And when your mobility is impaired, I do. Yes, this is my opinion. I am not aware of any papers that have explored this. But I would say, yes, I definitely see it clinically. And then the other one that I think is definitely, definitely important to recognize is dogs that are more anxious. I see them have a heightened response to pain. And we know this is very well documented in people. So if something painful happened to you, and then you go back into that scenario before even the pain insult occurs, you begin to experience pain. Like a good example of this is children when they get vaccinated. So the first time they go in happy, you know, they're great, and then they get poked with that needle, and then they scream. And then the next time they go to the pediatrician, they begin their fear and anxiety begins to heighten that perception of pain, because pain is emotional. It's not, you know, it's experienced in a very emotional way. And I think addressing anxiety in our patients is very important for pain management.
I totally agree with you. And one more thing I even want to add to that a dog bite or cat scratch or bite may more likely occur. I mean, if you're in pain, not you personally, Dr. Alvarez, but in general, you might more likely snap at that person you love. Well, dogs do it in their own way.
Exactly.
So yeah, I think that's something.
Exactly right.
Yeah. All right. So what is this laser therapy about?
Laser. This is another fancier term that we're using more recently as photobiomodulation. It's
what?
Using light therapy. Yeah, because that's what it does. It's using light to then modulate cellular healing. So it's using light to improve healing capacity of tissues, and it's commonly used in rehab. I will say that, you know, as you probably can imagine, after I wrote a book on it, I prefer to focus on exercise. If you go to a physical therapist, they're not usually waving laser around to help you heal. Not that it doesn't have a role. I just think we have a much bigger opportunity to improve healing through exercise rather than with laser. I actually published a paper, a systematic review, looking at, you know, what was most helpful in recovering dogs post TPLO surgery. So this is the most common surgery we do when dogs tear their ACL. And in that systematic review, out of all the rehab modalities that helped, the one that helped the most, the one that had the highest level of evidence, was exercise. And laser actually had very low level of evidence.
Well, I think what you just said sums up everything that you are about and something we should consider. I mean, we're running out of time here. So yes or no, are our dogs under-exercised overall?
Yes.
And there you go. Yeah, and I think that's what, if there's an underlying message, I suggest that might be it. The name of the book, Handbook of Canine Exercise Therapy. As always, Dr. Leilani Alvarez, a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so much, Steve.
The American pet industry continues to break records. And the newest data from the American Pet Products Association paints a picture of a nation overall more devoted to companion animals than ever before. According to APPA's 2026 State of the Industry report, 95 million U.S. households now have at least one pet, representing nearly three-quarters of all American homes. In 2024, about 91 million households had at least one pet. Dogs, they remain America's top dog, the favorite companion animal. APPA reports that 71 million households own at least one dog, a jump from 51%. That's quite a jump from 2024. Cats, by the way, they are also surging in popularity, with 53 million households now owning cats, but mostly increased by Generation Z and millennials. It's young people that want cats. Economic concerns have not significantly reduced ownership. Roughly 77% of pet owners say financial pressures have not affected whether they keep their pets. However, that means 33% are impacted by economic affordability factors, and that's still millions, many millions, of pet guardians. Having said all this, we spend so much money on pets, those dollars impact the human economy. Our economy in the United States is impacted on how much money people spend day to day on pets. The APPA says Americans spend a whopping $158 billion on pets in 2025, up 3.7% from the previous year. Projections for this year are even more. Of course, inflation has something to do with that. What is especially notable is how Americans continue prioritizing pets despite economic concerns. APPA found that many pet owners are adjusting their own budgets, if they can, and their own lifestyles before cutting back on care for their animals. About half of pet owners said their pet spending remained unchanged last year, even amid inflation and higher household costs. Having said that, shelters and rescues across the nation are seeing, in some cases, a record number of animals being relinquished to their doors. Not an all-time record, but certainly a recent record, and certainly since the pandemic. Americans spent, what do you think, more on anything else? Veterinary care? No. Pet food. That comes in at number one, $68.3 billion, followed then by veterinary care and product sales. Next week on Steve Dale's Pet World, dog trainer Zach George will be here, always outspoken. If you follow Zach in social media, you will see he always speaks his mind. And he will be speaking about some legislation in the works to inhibit puppy mills and, in fact, move the responsibility of quote-unquote policing these facilities from the Department of Agriculture. And I've always said that's a good idea because our dogs are not agriculture. They're not cows or other animals, sheep. They're not agricultural commodities. They're parts of our family. In any which case, he is concerned about how the American Kennel Club is actually fighting this legislation. We'll also talk with a veterinary cardiologist about heart disease in dogs and cats. That's next week, bright and early, on WGN.